Hinojo, please be seated.
Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Your Honour. The final question that I have for you as a group is one of understanding the time it might take for you to do some drafting to reflect the concept that we've been talking about today. Now, I understand that some preliminary thinking has occurred, but that further time and effort will be required in order to put together the policy and the entry condition, a matter of control and discretion. If you were tasked with recording and writing what that might look like, how quickly might that be able to be achieved, given the timetable in place, at least for the rest of this week, where I think most of you are involved in coming back? So I think perhaps first question, is it something that you perhaps are confident that collectively you could put together some drafting for? The witnesses are nodding.
Yes.
And how long might you need to assist with that exercise?
Tom de Postmaker, I probably, I'm not sure what my colleagues' commitments are, other commitments outside of Plan Change 7. I'm happy to start working on the draft over the next couple of days and circulate it before the end of the week, Thursday, or maybe tomorrow even. Mm-hmm.
And just in terms of, and I'm thinking of the balance of the time left this week, there's nothing scheduled for Friday at this point in time, and I wonder whether is Friday too early to report back on drafting in terms of what might be required.
It works for me, and I believe for my colleagues as well.
Okay. Perhaps we'll see what happens in terms of the balance of questions from my friends and from the court, but it may well be that some further drafting can take place during the course of this week, and that drafting could be presented to the court if we have time on Friday. Thank you. Those are my questions.
MFE, sorry, Ms Dixon. Ms Dixon.
Thank you, Your Honour. I just want to pick up where Mr Moore has left off, really. As I understand it, the last version that we've been working to of PC7 is the one that's actually attached to the other joint witness statement from the conferencing of the 4th to the 6th of May. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the one I've got in front of me.
Right. So in terms of the conferencing on the 3rd and the 17th of May on deemed priorities, there wasn't another version of PC7 that came out with that. That's right.
That's right. So that wasn't part of the agenda for the the priorities conferencing.
Sure. It wasn't a criticism. I was just making sure that we were all in the same in the same place. So the...
Which one are we looking at now?
The version of PC7 that I'm looking at, sir, is the one that's attached to the joint witness statement from the other conferencing,
yes,
the 4 to 6 May conference.
Okay,
the one on, the one that deals with, you know, the schedule and parts of the...
answer is kind of, because that document has been submitted twice. So you've got a JWS for the 4th to the 6th of May, and then the planners have annotated changes to that on the 21st of May as a consequence of some more thinking on one of on attachment 10. So the one I'd be working to is one which is dated the 21st of May, and it goes on to say, "I'm following sensitivity testing of step 4 in schedule 10A4. So that's the one that I'm working to, filed at Randwick on the same day.
Yes.
Okay.
But in terms of what I wanted to ask the panel about, I don't think the numbering's changed at all, and in essence, we're talking about the same. Hopefully, we're talking about the same document.
We'll just get to the right document. That was the one that came in.
But I just wanted to pick up actually on a point that Mr. Brass made, and this is purely about drafting. And in terms of the exercise that Mr. Moore has just requested, really, that you undertake this week with not a great deal of time. And my suggestion and my question really was to say, is substantially the policy there already, which is the policy framework for that, and it's the policy that Mr. Brass mentioned before, at 10A2.1C, I think. Yes, still C. Any existing residual flow, minimum flow, or take cessation condition is applied to the new permit. And I think the point that's been made around the panel is that needs to include a take reduction condition. So that would presumably need to be an amendment to allow for that as well. But you were talking about a new policy. So do I take it that you consider that more is necessary than that to lay the policy groundwork for what we're talking about here?
I guess just when I was referring to that, my understanding is that I think that in addition to that existing policy could suffice. You could skin the cat either way into a separate policy, but I think it would be cleaner, clearer, to simply make that addition to the existing policy.
Sorry, can you say it again?
Basically, addition to provide for essentially any existing, formerly known as rights of priority, to be carried over.
I don't think that was your question. Are you saying, I love it. It's like a pop star. I've forgotten whose name was formerly known as. But anyway, that star. Are you saying, why do you need to say anything more? Because if you add in take recession as well, you've got the gamut covered by what a priority would be doing.
Yes, I was interested in the idea that there would need to be an additional policy, just thinking about keeping it simple from a drafting perspective, and noting that this has been actually in the policy for some time, I think. It didn't come in as a result of this particular joint witness conference. But it seems to be the basis of the policy that's needed here anyway.
Yeah, but it's predicated with the word any existing, so that's fine. So if you add in any take recession, that covers in part what these priorities are doing.
Yes, and I think what Mr. Brass was suggesting before was that it needs to allow for take cessation, but
take
also
cessation.
Take reduction.
Take reduction, yeah. That's my recession, which I have been brought to task with in your JWS, it doesn't matter. Cessation and recession and cessation would cover the gamut of what a priority is doing when it's exercised, is
yes.
The proposition.
Yes.
Yeah, and with that in mind?
Yes. However, I'm not certain because of the way they're expressed that currently that says any residual flow, minimum flow, or take cessation condition. Given that in most cases they sit outside the conditions, there may need to be some extra wording there, or take cessation conditions or other provisions or advice notes. Don't tie me to that wording, but some wording there to allow you to import what are currently expressed as rights of priority.
Right, yes.
Is that just a definitional matter that you could pick up? A condition on a deemed permit includes notes. Because I think it does. If it's
yes.
included as a note, it means a condition.
I think that is definitely one approach. Yeah.
My other question, really, again, still on the drafting. I agree with you that there now seems to be a gap in terms of what's being proposed around the controlled activity. Presumably, there would need to be an addition in terms of the following conditions are met, framed around what you were talking about earlier. But I was wondering about the matters of control that Commissioner Edmonds raised. So the council reserves control over the following matters. And I was wondering the extent to which A actually already meets or goes some way towards meeting what we're talking about now. Historical use and existing water permit conditions, the volume and rate of water taken, dammed, discharged or diverted. How far does that take us, do you think?
I think that possibly does, and I believe I made a comment that you could either sort of express that, that this is a carryover of previous rights of priority in the matter of control or in the policy, or the entry conditions. So one approach would be to have that located elsewhere, and if that's clear elsewhere, I think that that matter of control would allow you to then impose a condition that reflects the previous right of priority.
I'm with you. Anybody else?
I agree with Mr. Brass on that. Yeah, and that's actually consistent with the approach, I think, that the planners took with the other JWS, and I won't be able to pin exactly what it was in that one, but there were a couple of instances where we were asked whether consequential changes to the matter of control was needed, and we said no, because the existing ones cover it off. And it, so, yeah, that would be consistent with the approach taken with that one too.
So just to recap, what you think the matters of matters of control presently are sufficient because
that A, in accordance with historical use and existing water permit conditions, could potentially cover off the exercise of what were previously priorities and the bringing over.
That's predicated on Dr. Somerville's opinion being wrong, though.
No, sorry. I'm not predicating it on his opinion being wrong. I actually agree that rights of priority are extinguished in 2021. It's that mimicking something formerly known as. So it would be a recreating under the RMA.
Replicating
the effect. Thank you. It gets quite confusing when I think for myself, and I don't know if Mr. Brass and Mr. DePalsmaker are also meaning this, but when I'm saying bringing across, I'm talking about replicating the effect, not assuming that they still are live.
And so where do you see the effect in place there? Is it historical use?
Historical use and existing water permit conditions. So again, and that could link back to that matter of control with take cessation conditions, and it could be amended to take reduction or cessation conditions, and that could link through to a definition of what take cessation and reduction conditions include, which could reference back to previous this previous statutory fiction of priorities, potentially. And this is all on the hoof, Your Honour. So
existing water permit conditions, that depends on reconsenting before the 1st of October.
Yeah, that is that one, that section 124 issue, isn't
again,
it?
Again, the elephant in the room.
Yes.
And which is one of the things you raise with parties.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it does. But, you know, if you've got something really streamlined, you might be able to whiz through them.
And potentially, while the priority might not be carried through with 124, section 124, but that doesn't prevent a replication of the effect post October 2021.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, there's a lot to think about, but anyway,
sorry,
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I have also toyed in the back of my mind with the idea of a term along the lines of as existed at 30 September 2021.
That might be a better way to go.
Yeah. Mm. It is an approach, because that's quite commonly done in plans, isn't it? You know, such and such that existed at a particular period of time then has a particular activity status and a whole lot of ramifications. That's a pretty common technique, isn't it?
Yeah, and then it doesn't have to carry on post that date, but the status at that date is a matter of record, and you then create a new creature which gives that same effect.
Hmm. Which is a creature under the RMA?
Yes.
Yeah. And probably my last question really is around the discussion of the schedule that would list, that was referred to earlier, that might list all the relationships between these expiring deemed permits and the deemed priorities and so on, or the deemed priorities within the deemed permits that are expiring. It struck me that that was a big ask for council to have to undertake at this stage, and I was interested in really, if this is for 6 years, essentially, the whole thing being quite interim, provided the relationship is understood on the individual consent that's created under the RMA, under the new regime, and every consent holder, and it's visible on the consent, so from the purpose of enforcement, the relationship between the old priorities in terms of the new relationships is there on the consent itself, on the face of it. Is there really any additional benefit to the creation of this super schedule, given the resource that would need to go into it? Given that we're talking about an interim period.
Yeah, I Tom de Palsemaker. I mentioned that actually before. At the start, it would be quite difficult, especially when you go into a catchment and you start replacing the first couple of deemed permits. The benefit would be further down the track, but they're all coming in at the same time as well. Mm. So for a lot of catchments, smaller catchments, it wouldn't be too hard. Just eyeballing the list of catchments and how many remaining deemed permits there are, the majority of them are small catchments with a handful of deemed permits, but then there are some really, really, really complex ones.
Yeah.
The Manaharakia and the Tari are the first ones that spring to mind, but even Loburn might be quite complex. So it's really hard to describe to you the difficulties without having started or undertaken a task.
Yeah.
Like I said at the start, it would involve quite a bit of work, quite a bit of digging. When we did the review of the deemed permits as well, some have been digitized, some not. Some are not even on the database. So it means that you actually manually have to trawl through paper files to do that in a comprehensive manner.
Mm. I can understand the interest in having it, but it does
seem... It has been done in the past.
Yes.
Sally Dicey, I guess the potential benefit is knowing that you haven't missed anyone. So in terms of everybody, if everybody's going to get, in effect, the same thing carried over, then you want to ensure that there are no permits that should have it applied to them that somehow get missed because the database is incorrect. That might need further thought from the council as to whether they think that's a risk or not based on their database search and otherwise, you know, the information we were provided at the expert conference saying was there are 310 deemed permits, and 163 of those with priority, and so yeah, would be a search of 310 deemed permits manually.
So would it be a way of cross-checking against the information that the consent applicant provides you when they apply under a controlled activity listing?
So if you'd already
their priority relationships.
If you'd gone through the 310 manually, and I'm guessing that's what would have to occur rather than just relying on the database, then, and that some of those will be paper, some digitised, it would take someone or a few people going through each one of those and then writing up the trees of how the, or the jigsaw of how those fit together in terms of priorities. And then when the applications come on, there's an easy reference tool as a backstop to cross-check that these, you know, these are the priorities that will be replicated.
Mm. That's all. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Ms. Williams.
Thank you, Ron. Just picking up on that last point, we have, of course, Appendix 3 to your joint witness statement, which is a report generated by the council listing by water body current deemed permits expiring, and there are a number of subtotals through that, and I'm not going to take you through all of them because that would be too much, but certainly there are numbers that leap out at you, such as 58 in the Tairi catchment subtotal and also 83 in the Manahira Kia catchment subtotal. And so there is at least some base information which could assist with the generation of that schedule.
Correct, but you still, as Ms. Dicey was pointing out, you still have to review every single one.
Yeah.
And you might, for the Manahira Kia, you probably end up with separate schedules as the deemed permits are not linked together in one system, but there are a number of different systems.
Okay. The benefit, of course, then being, as expressed by Ms. Dicey, that actually council has some certainty around what permits are being exercised and applying and or could be applied in each catchment?
Correct.
Yep. Yep. Okay. I actually want to take you back to, so out of the detail of plan change, and just take you back up to something that was being discussed by Ms. Dicey in her answers to, I think it was, the court. And it's just around minimum flow. And so in the regional water plan, minimum flow is defined in the glossary as the flow below which the holder of any resource consent to take water must cease taking water. So that is a hard limit, isn't it, once you have a minimum flow? And there's nodding, but...
Tom de Pelsmacher, that's correct, yes. Although exceptions do apply. There are certain consent it takes that are exempt.
But they are expressly exempt from the minimum flow in the consent?
Yes.
Yes. So if it's expressed as a condition of consent, then they must cease taking water?
Correct.
Okay. And so in the context of the I think it was the campground or the OPA campground, That's what you were talking about, Ms. Dicey, that the issue can be with a hard limit, like a minimum flow as expressed in the plan, that is not something which is always being met voluntarily. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Sorry, I thought the campground was a voluntary measure.
Yes.
And hence... voluntarily,
yes,
and so, but a hard limit in a plan, you're meeting that, aren't you?
Sorry?
The hard limit in the plan, they have to meet that. If, or is the district regional council saying, don't worry about the minimum flows, you can go below?
So there is no minimum flow in the plan at the moment for campground.
No, that's right. So it's a voluntary measure.
Yes.
And it's not a hard measure.
Yes.
Insofar it's Mr. Dicey's soft measure, which yes. means that the regional council says you can go below. I don't know why the regional council is even involved, but anyway, you can go below.
And so I guess that is my point, Your Honour, is that because it's not currently expressed as a minimum flow, it's not a hard limit that they're required to meet.
Yes, I think, I think Ms. Dicey agrees with you on that.
Yep, that's fine. Coming back perhaps to the way to express the matters of control in the rule, and I'm thinking specifically here about paragraph A. That's right. And I have that, and that's again, Your Honour, referring to, I think, the 21 May version of the joint witness statement. So 10A3.1.1, council reserves control over the following matters. Matter A. We've been talking about the need to, because the conditions can't just be rolled over because they expire, deemed mining privileges, deemed permits expire, we accept that. Do you agree that the wording in accordance with is in effect a way of saying replicating the effect of, so that allows for that to happen, that opening wording?
I would agree with that.
Murray Brass, I would agree with that, but again, for that to have the desired intent, because it's not clear in the wording there, it allows for it, but it doesn't show intent, that intent would need to be expressed
in the policy.
In the policy or entry condition.
Yep. Understood. And I had going to be propose, again, in paragraph A, that existing could be replaced with prior, but of course that doesn't have a time component, and I think, Mr. Brass, that you had proposed that it could be rephrased so that it could state for paragraph A, in accordance with historical use and water permit conditions as existed as at 30 September 2001, the volume and, water and rate of water, etc. And that was to pick up and allow the ability to replicate conditions, but allowing for the fact that the permits expire.
Yes, but it might need some more thinking about how that would apply to consents that are actually where a replacement consent is issued prior to first of September. So there will probably need to be some fettling of the wording, but that intent that a right that would have otherwise applied or would apply on that date.
You mean if somebody had their application process today, how would that language apply?
Well, so if they were issued a replacement consent now, then the previous consent typically falls away, so it wouldn't have any rights as at or historic use in existing as at the 1st of September. I think there's probably wording around that, and maybe the Regional Council has got a fair old bottleneck and it might not be an issue anyway.
Of the replacement consents people have don't actually commence until the 1st of October. Mm. It was certainly, I believe, the case in the Lindis consenting process, and I think we did hear about others possibly that are in a similar situation.
And then that needs thinking through too, because you wouldn't want to be inviting the council to start consenting after the second, on the second, I would have thought, but you might.
And just the last matter I just wanted to run by you, Mr. De Pelsenmaker, and you may not be able to answer this. The expectation currently is that as consents come in, we heard evidence from Ms. King and I can't remember the name of the other witness, that they do try to allocate consents by a catchment basis so that the same consent officer is dealing with consents from same catchment and things of that nature. Do you anticipate that if we are going to have priorities coming through in the way described, that there will still be this intention to, from the council's perspective, to process applications on a catchment basis?
I can confirm the first part. Yes,
yep.
That's the current practice. We've done that for Manahara here, where it's actually not one person, but a team
of
designated people deal with all the replacement processes in one catchment. I cannot confirm whether the consents team is going to do that for other catchments. It also depends on whether all those consents are coming in at the same time as well.
Okay, no, that's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Page.
I just have a drafting query for you to contemplate in relation to the control that might be reserved in relation to priorities. Is it the case, in your understanding, that priorities under the deemed permit is effectively a species of resource allocation? Is that what it's doing, allocating access to water between different permit holders?
Yes, that's my understanding, it was based on the date.
Okay. And is it your understanding, then, that the resource allocation mechanism bites when there isn't enough flow in a water body to serve all of the permits to their maximum extent simultaneously?
Sorry, was Sally Dicey answering that previous question, and again with this one, yes, that's my understanding.
Yeah. So if we're thinking about a method that might be attached as a condition to replacement permits, is it important that the ability of one permit holder to give notice to another only bites when there is insufficient water available to serve all of the needs of their priorities at the same time?
That's how I would see it operating.
Well, hold on a sec. You said insufficient water to serve all of their needs. Is it all of their needs, or just the superior title, the superior permit?
That's a better way of expressing it, Mark.
Okay, because otherwise there's two different propositions there.
Yes.
Yep, all right.
I had in mind the proposition that you've
put.
The superior permit,
yes. Okay.
And so to identify the problem I'm getting at in a different way, you're not expecting that a permit holder can give notice to another when there's perfectly adequate water available to serve them both?
No.
Thank you.
Is that a problem for the drafting, though? Is that a drafting thing you're going to pick up on or not?
It's a dynamic which, in my submission, is that the drafting needs to take into account to ensure that we're not simply handing to one permit holder the right to tell another one to stop when their own access to water isn't being curtailed.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, isn't that what your right is currently under the rights of priority? But nobody does it that way because you'd be drummed out of town if you did it that way. I mean, I can think of the Loburn summation of the sort of, and I won't repeat it, the sort of policy that applies to people who do that. And Manaata had quite harsh words. Yeah.
And at the moment, natural dynamics, if we can call it that, between neighbours ensure that they behave themselves. But what we're doing now is inviting the council to take part in the enforcement regime. So in my submission, it's important that we think about the meets and bounds of the ability of one permit holder to give notice to another. And it's,
yeah.
To my submission, it's a relatively straightforward drafting exercise, but I didn't want it to be lost sight of while the witnesses were
okay,
impaneled.
So do you say... I'll bet you do your reading.
My friend has just alerted me to the fact that the drafting of the Water and Soil Conservation Amendment Act 1971 actually addresses the issue, but that needs to be carried through.
Just to put me out of my suspense.
Right.
What does it say?
Let me read to you the opening line of Section 13 of the Water and Soil Conservation Amendment Act 1971, which reads, exercise of priority to water. In any case where the water flowing in any watercourse is insufficient to supply fully all of the races lawfully connected herewith. And it goes on.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
Is that a proposition which needs to be carried forward into the ability of one permit holder to ask another to reduce their abstraction?
Sally Dicey, yes, I think so.
Thank you.
So you don't think that's... Why, Water races.
I mean, is this all about water races?
Well,
because sometimes the river and the stream and everything else is being used like
yes.
a water race.
Well,
so
no,
does that cover that?
The water race issue was a red herring. It's the insufficiency to supply that triggers the right to exercise a priority under the Water and Soil Conservation Act.
I did throw out the water races as in my minute, going, oh, are we just dealing with water races here? But I don't think anyone bit with that. But anyway, so why do you say that you've got no anxiety now about that?
About water races?
No. I think I'm just going to be left in suspense about that. But why isn't there no anxiety about... why is there... The caveat insufficient water to put into a race, does that come down now on those priorities or not?
Yes. Well, yeah. if they are to be enforced through the mechanism that my
current day priorities, does that
correct.
Come down? It does.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Mm. And so you're saying it should be carried over?
Yes. Because only in circumstance of insufficiency does the priority get to be exercised. And I'm just wanting to ensure that the planners have had an opportunity to contemplate that when they're doing the drafting work that's been asked of them.
I didn't write it all down.
And I will leave out the reference to the water races.
Okay, maybe that's a good idea.
In any case... yes. Well, I'll read the opening words of Section 13 of the Water and Soil Conservation Amendment Act 1971, which reads, in any case where the water flowing in any watercourse is insufficient to supply. Now, that drafting is shown in the permit that's attached as Appendix 1 to the JWS, so there's a record of it already there, at the bottom of page 7 of 9. Well, it's called S13, Exercise of Priority. Right. I want to now move on to another slide. I think it's either slide 3 or slide 4, whoever's operating that screen of the joint witness summary. Yes, other types of resource consent conditions. Now, there you've listed five different types of conditions that can regulate access to water. And we've only been talking so far this afternoon about priorities. Is it your view that these kinds of methods should be included in Plan Change 7, or are you restricting your recommendations in relation to a priority type mechanism?
We were, I was restricting it to a priority type mechanism. These were merely examples of other types of consent conditions that can regulate access to water in response to a question in the agenda. Is that?
Yeah, Murray Brass, but noting that where those other types of conditions currently apply under a permit being replaced under Plan Change 7, that would automatically be carried across right. under the other provisions. So we've turned our mind to the priority situation, not those other situations.
Mr. De Pelsmaker?
Yes, I agree with my colleagues. We considered these and see whether we could apply them potentially, but when you look at the first three, they are dependent on a trigger again.
Yes.
And the bottom two bullet points we discussed or I presented some more information on that further down the further in the slideshow. Basically, we considered the potential for group management, but again, it comes back to a regulatory trigger in many cases.
Yes. And taking your example of the bottom two conditions and their engagement with a group situation, is it your understanding that applications under Plan Change 7 will necessarily come forward as a group, or might they come forward individually?
Either one. They yep. might decide as a group to come forward, might have an eye on the future, because that means that once they come in under the land and water plan, there is an opportunity to come up with a better opportunity, to come up with a comprehensive catchment proposal. But I foresee the other situation as well, where people just come in as individuals.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Nothing further, Mark.
Thank you. Right. Our questions.
Did Mr. Moore have questions as opposed to leading?
Oh, did you want to ask questions?
Very systematically. Thank you at the at the beginning. I just wondered, did you have any questions?
No, not at this stage. I'm content with the questions that I've put.
That's okay.
No questions.
Okay, your questions.
Well, just one thing that I feel that I'm rather unclear on, and that's understanding, just looking at these entry conditions, and we're dealing with deem permits, potentially, as a controlled activity or an RD where you don't have the data in a particular form. So you have your deem permits, and then you have the people who've got RMA permits. And what I wanted to be clear about is that these entry conditions that refer to, we could start with a residual flow. Did I understand you to say earlier that no deem permits have a residual flow?
Correct. I have not seen a deemed permit that has a residual flow condition imposed on it.
So, but you did have some caveats as to you know, whether you'd gone through them all or the database was sufficient or in your JWS there was some question about what you might be able to do or not do and rely on in interrogating the database. But as a general proposition, you don't think there are any with residual flow
on
conditions.
On deemed permits.
So I'll need to ask you now the same question about minimum flow. So on deemed permits?
No, no minimum flows on deemed permits. To my knowledge, to the best of my knowledge.
So these entry conditions then?
I think it's policy 6419. So they are a creature of the plan. They will not be on deemed permits because deemed permits predate the plan.
Well, so, okay, well, thank you for that. So I guess I'd been thinking about it more in terms of a sort of plain English kind of thing where you're required to leave a residual flow, but you're saying that the way one would interpret this has to be read in the light of the plan, right? Okay. And so that would be the same with the minimum flow, would it?
That
would
is
be
correct. And that is how we interpreted the question as well, would be minimum flows or residuals flows
is set in
under the plan.
Yeah.
That being said, again, I have not come across any deemed permits that have minimum flow, that have conditions that would have the same effect as a minimum flow or a residual flow. And my colleagues may expand on that.
I was looking back at the transcript and I saw that Mrs. Manson had said she had a deemed permit with a residual flow. And I looked up her consent because that confused me, and her consent was actually a water permit. But then in the application, we had referenced, and when I looked at the consent, it did have a residual flow on it. It was a water permit. There was no reference to it being a deemed permit, but it expired in October 2021. And in the application, we had linked it back to some previous authority, and that was a number 3645 or something, which kind of indicates that it's an original mining right or a... So there may well be some odd anomalies in there, so that maybe that water permit was once linked to some right in some fashion, but it is now a water permit which has residual flows but an expiry in October 2021. So on the face of it, it's not a deemed permit, but... In Mrs. Manson's mind, it was a deemed permit and with a residual flow, and so sometimes that might be some kind of historic link to something. But on the legally, no deemed permits should be subject to any minimum flow, any kind of environmental condition at all beyond. The rate of abstraction and however that was expressed, often litres per hour.
And Murray Brass, and again, having been involved in rolling over some of these or replacing them under that process where it is reissuing something that is still a deemed permit, it is a mechanical or an accounting exercise which carries over what was previously existing, and sometimes there's some detective work to confirm what was previously existing, but given that, it would require some extra intervention to impose a residual flow or a minimum flow. I couldn't categorically say that that is impossible or hasn't happened, but it would certainly it would be the exception and very definitely not the default.
Okay, so in summary then, there may be the odd outlier in terms of a deemed permit, but really the focus of that
entry condition relates really to RMA permits that are going to expire before 2025.
Yes, that would be my understanding. That was Mr. Brass.
But the, yeah. So we're just talking here about priorities then largely in terms of these deemed permits. Yeah, okay. Thank you. I just wanted to be clear about that.
All right. What if an individual or a catchment don't agree to apply on this basis, that is, through an entry condition, either as a controlled or as an RDA, giving effect to these superior and subservient permits in a way which has been done in the past. But what then happens to them?
I would anticipate they would have to proceed under the non-complying rule, which is currently drafted. Would create quite a large barrier and would dissuade, I think, just about anybody taking that path for that reason.
But the path is, the barrier particularly is for longer duration consents. What if it's just somebody going, as Mr. Page, I think you said, family disputes, you mentioned that last week. What if there are disputes within the catchment, or within a subcatchment, on a treble, wherever they are, and people say, no, I'm not going to adhere to that? That would simply be non-complying. All other things being equal, it's probably minor effect. Well, I don't know. It could be a major or minor effect on the environment, couldn't it? Especially if you've got...
Murray Brass, I think the key thing then is that with it going the non-complying pathway... it's then open to a full assessment of the effects and understanding what the impact of that change would be on ecology, hydrology, other users.
Yeah, but beyond that, is the salient effect the potential for the flow to be amended or just, you know, changed in some way if the hitherto priorities are not continued?
Yes, that would be the effect that would flow from not continuing the effect of the priority, but it would then be open to fully assess what the impacts of that change in flow are, would be my understanding.
Okay, all right. Questions? No questions, okay. Sorry, everyone, anything else you want to say? Okay, so reflecting back on all of that, there's quite an exercise, I think, to be done if you're going to land that. And I've, you know, it's not as if we hadn't thought about is there another mechanism. So the exercise that you have to do, and you may or may not have the right witnesses here. I mean, you have the right witnesses for Section 32, and that needs to be completed. You do need to have the right witnesses on board for the enforcement mechanism. What is anticipated in relation to enforcement? I think you have to have an enforcement review or overview of it. You probably do actually have to have somebody from your consents team actually in on the ground with the drafting as well. They can interpret how these things are to apply or not apply. I think that's going to be absolutely essential, not just matters of policy, but, you know, but matters of consenting. What else? You do need to consider what the merits is for. There needs to be a merits-based argument to be put to the court in support of this. You do need to think about affected neighbours' approval, whether you need it, don't need it. Yeah, whether you need it or don't need it, I guess. And I've forgotten what this plan change might say about effective neighbours' approval, whether it's not required for anything.
There's a notification preclusion clause on the controlled activity in the RDA.
And the RDA. So yes. It would probably have to apply both ways. But then you actually have to be really certain that you actually know who are the potential people who are caught up in this. So if I don't have to ask you, I have to be damn sure that I actually have identified in my neighbour, in my application, who are all of the subservient or superior rights. How would you know that necessarily? You hope that you'd know that because of the close-knit communities, but maybe you don't. So maybe there does need to be a schedule, as cumbersome as that is. When would that schedule be prepared? Does it need to be landed before the court says yes or no? I think the court would think it would need to be landed. So you need to think about that because, I'm not sure that you're obviating or avoiding any exercise by actually not doing the schedule, especially where neighbours' approvals aren't required, especially where there can be conflict within a water body in a highly competitive environment. So we need to be thinking about that as well.
Just on the neighbour's approval, is that in the context of the witness's suggestion that it may well be that priorities are dispensed with if all parties agreed, or is this just in...
No, just in general, because I think in general you don't need neighbours' approval. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, correct.
So that's been dispensed with. Mm. Now I put my application in, and I actually have not properly identified people who can turn me off, I guess. I guess it has to go both ways. In other words, my titles or permits which are superior to me. I haven't identified that. You don't need neighbours' approval. Now we're relying on the regional council to have a complete database that can identify people who are affected so that the notation can go on the permit, can go on the consent.
Yes. Just thinking that through, the application... Well, the deemed permit being replaced will have the recorded on it, either as conditions or in a schedule, the priorities as exist currently.
Mm. You need to.
It's
you
the
need
translation
to have
of the number, such as it is, to the current consent holder or the current consent.
And verification that you've actually got the correct information. So either way, the council has to have the correct information. It cannot step around that. There's too much, I would have thought, at risk. Yeah. So we need to think about that as well. And then you might want to mock up what an application might look like and what a consent condition
might...
And
the condition,
what that might look
condition.
Like. Yeah. Picking something easy like quarry burn, where we know they're exercising them on an individual basis and there's not too many consents down there. I wouldn't have thought, it's a short... water course, maybe. So, is this doable? It's the doable. Is it doable?
It's certainly doable. It's certainly not doable by this Friday, I would suggest,
no,
in terms of thinking. But in terms of putting in train a process to assemble that information. I can perhaps report back to you on that. I'll have a think about it and perhaps have a discussion with my friends when we break tonight.
And then, of course, is the drafting. It's the, do we need... Nobody's mentioned the objective. But do we need a policy amendment or not? And there seems to be two schools of thought here. Do we need entry conditions and then the matters of control?
Hmm.
Yeah.
So,
bearing in mind the matters of control should not allow the regional council to surreptitiously impose a minimum of loads.
Quite.
Not the point. Yeah.
Quite. My submission in the context of the policy would be that there probably does need to be some addition in light of the potential for a non-complying activity consent to be lodged with a six-year timeframe on it. There needs to be a policy signal about what is sought to be achieved in the context of reflecting the effect of the priorities. So,
or the thing formerly known as a priority bit, which is not a priority.
Yes, we'll give it a symbol, I think.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's the singer from Perth who sung Purple Rain. Who is that?
Prince.
The singer formerly known. I had something in mind. Anyway. And then you have to land it, and it's an entirely separate question in the law.
Mm. Yes. Yes. And what can might usefully say on the part of my friends, we've had some discussions about that, and I don't think that we are far apart collectively on our view, and it does differ. But putting aside, well, being really clear about what this proposal is, or more particularly what it is not, is important. Mm. What is being framed up here is an RMA set of provisions. Mm. It's not an attempt to extend the operation of existing priorities. So, in a sense, the priorities that they do expire, there's acceptance that they do expire. The question is, can a framework be developed that's compliant with the RMA in terms of the obligations or requirements to have a plan with a rule in it, dealing with a particular effect? And
what is the effect you're dealing with? I think, to me, I mean, and again, just speaking for myself here, and I know that Ms. Williams has a different view possibly, but I never thought these things were dealing with environmental effects.
There's an incidental
environment. So, Ms. Williams, do you now accept that that is the case? That would, yeah, I thought that was your bridge too far with the...
Oh, no, you're right. I don't think I was ever arguing that they were intended to achieve an environmental effect. Mm. It's simply that by their existence, they created an environmental effect.
Okay, all right. All right, good.
Mm-hmm. And then I think the second purpose is one of allocation between water users.
Oh, I thought that was an interesting submission, given the, you know, the arguments to and fro. Is a resource consent an allocation of a resource? And the answer was, yes, it is. No, it isn't. So I thought it was curious that it not. I don't think that's you, Mr. Page, but it was curious that it had come up. Mm.
So there's.
So there's an argument. You need to look at that too, because there is actually a big debate happening here.
Yes. So in terms of grounding the proposal, if I can loosely call it that, it would need to be grounded in the RMA.
It does. Yeah.
And that responds to the. Well, speak for myself. That ought to respond to the concerns about deemed priorities expiring. It's not to be seen as an attempt to continue on that which is currently referred to as priorities.
Yeah.
In that sense, it's a new regime reflective of the effect that the priorities had grounded in the RMA.
Yeah. Or the omission of priorities grounded in the RMA. And that's the potential there is clear, much is clearer.
Yes. So there's a legal pathway through in my submission, which will be given in far greater detail.
All right.
But in parallel, the process of framing up what that looks like, I think, is something which there is some desire to do on the part of parties. I'll see if there's any. Yes, there's some nodding. And hence worthy of further investment of time.
So, okay, so we'll look at it. And but we have to have something to see, and I mean, obviously, going to we've got three planners here, but we had a much larger team, and may yet give that back to our special advisor. But it may be desirable that everybody's planners, like Mr. Ensor and so on, are brought back for checking, seeing as they had an interest in this. If we bring back Dr. Somerville, and we may or may not. I think it's going to be really important that he have something to respond to. So I'm not sure whether parties are thinking he's right, but there's a solution, or he's wrong. But whether he's right or wrong, there's still a solution. But there needs to be a solution, is what we're saying. Is we recognise that.
Yes. Insofar as we are perhaps agreed with Dr. Somerville, it's with his paragraph 48, insofar as that if there's a rule involving a priority regime, it would have to be re-evaluated under the RMA. So I don't think we're apart on that.
I shall tell him that you agreed with one paragraph, and he'll be like...
And insofar as the parts that we perhaps take a different view on, that may not actually matter when it comes to the solution being provided. We will, of course, address that, but it may have no bearing on the outcome if we can put it within the RMA box.
Yeah, but you need now to be, everybody really needs to pin their colours to the wall in terms of where are we sitting in relation to priorities. And I don't think it's been well addressed or addressed in depth thus far. So we will be directing that if you disagree, then you're to succinctly state the points of disagreement so that, and we'll consider whether or not to have Dr. Somerville provide a reply, but he shouldn't be providing a reply without actually knowing what he's actually responding to. So can you think about what that might look like? When you might get to providing your points of submission so that we can get that to him, or any submission. Yeah, and I take on board that even if you do disagree, it may come to maybe of no moment anyway, but... But just remember, just because parties think the court has jurisdiction, if it doesn't have jurisdiction, it doesn't have jurisdiction. You can think what you like, so it doesn't exist. So yes. I need you to be taking us over the line.
Mr. Warwick, we were thinking about actually how, over the earlier adjournment, how to enable these arguments to be put to the court. And to also give Dr. Somerville a chance to consider the arguments that are being put and to respond. And we wondered if one way in which to do that would be if we actually filed legal submissions that we intend to present that week of the 28th on the question of deemed priorities, say a week or so in advance.
Yeah, you could
and
do.
And they were provided to the court and to Dr. Somerville at the same time.
Or it could be a synopsis. So either whatever puts him in the best position to respond. And it may well be... Having received that, we may require no response because either we're looking for a way through this problem. Yeah, because I think the minister's now saying, yeah, there could be a problem here.
In terms of the legal arguments around priorities.
Both the legal argument and the solution. If you don't have a solution to the priority, the problem of priority, well, do you agree, does the minister agree that the priorities, the rights of priorities cannot be brought forward after the 1st of October under Section 124 is what we'd be wanting to know. And then secondly, does that create a potential problem for permit holders?
Our position is very much, as Mr. Moore's just put it, that this question needs to be answered in terms of Dr. Somerville's paragraph 48, and that's what we're dealing with here.
Going around the issue. We know that we think you need a solution, but probably trying to draw the minister out as to whether he thinks there's a problem.
In terms of the transition from the Water and Soil Conservation Act through the RMA, etc., or
does the minister agree with the opinion of Dr. Somerville?
Minister agrees with parts of the opinion of Dr. Somerville.
And we're trying to draw out of you which parts do you disagree with, but anyway, you can keep your powder dry until the week
before. Disagrees with his conclusions on Section 124 and its operation.
Right. So, question, you think that continues?
Yeah, so the question becomes what actually happens after the 1st of October to the consents that have not actually been settled before that date and which need to continue beyond 1 October, exercising the old priorities.
Well, if 124 continue, if 124 applies,
yes,
then there is no issue, is there?
And that's part of the question.
But
that's also a separate question in my submission from the issue that Dr. Somerville raises at paragraph 48, where he says, whatever the framework that applies after the 1st of October,
you still need a rule. You still need something because you don't have a worked up flow and allocation regime under this plan change or under the water plan. So you did need something.
And it's got to be the jurisdiction of the RMA and the RMA tests.
So we thought it was either a problem now, as in 1 October, you needed a solution from that date, or you would have needed a solution when you came to process your applications for resource consent. So a problem in the future.
And without prejudging and jumping into the submissions. One of the things that we've been looking at, and actually I think my friends are doing the same thing, is that in some ways this is not a unique situation. The RMA provides for a number of activities that had a sunset clause. 30 years is a long sunset clause, but there are a number of other activities under the RMA that had a 10-year sunset clause. and needed to apply for resource consents by the 1st of April 2001, so they had a 10-year operation period. That applies to the Clutha scheme, that applies to the Wairaki geothermal scheme, and there are others as well.
Number of wastewater.
Number of wastewater.
That continue on in the consenting process through the through the court.
Anyway.
And consents were applied for, in the case of the two that I'm very familiar with, by the 1st of April 2001, but not actually finalised for a period of 6.5 years or so. So continue to operate under Section 124 right through that time. So there is a submission around what is applied in other instances and whether the same logic can be applied to this situation as well. That's my kind of thinking around Section 124.
All right.
But I think that's a different issue from what you're thinking about at the moment, which is whether we can, what's the term that's being used, create the effect, replicate the effect of the priorities in an RMA sense in a way that is permissible under the RMA, which I think is where Dr. Royden's going with.
And robust.
Paragraph 48.
Yeah, so it has to be robust in terms of enforcement, if that's what's imagined, and also for the consents team and their application of it, and information sources that they may rely upon in order to process these things.
And actually on that, one of the reasons I got to my feet was actually to say that you had raised a moment ago the question of what a water permit that included priorities might look like. And I was just going to say that that is the water permit that's attached to the JWS, actually, on deemed priorities. Because along with a number of other things, it actually lists the permits over which this permit can exercise priority. And there's a table of them.
Does it do so in archaic language, or has it modernised its language?
Well, it probably uses the archaic language.
Right.
And the language might need to change, but in terms of the way in which that's approached it, yes, there needs to be a new word for priority.
Right.
But it's worth having a look at that consent anyway, simply because it has dealt with.
So I'll leave it for parties to confer and to come back on the timeframe for drafting and timeframe for submissions, both of which has to be, I would have thought, 2 weeks out from the hearing so that we can at least have the option of providing it to the special advisor and to the amicus for further opinion if that's what we decide to do. Yeah, we don't know what their availability is, and we want to allow them sufficient time and then for that to come back to the court.
Yes.
So yeah.
What
would your general drafting be?
I think some of the ideas that were coming out was
Oh, yeah. That includes the general drafting.
Really is reflective of quite a lot of the answers we had in terms of, you know, perhaps you need to say the 30th of September or something as the date that you've got your deemed permit. Those kinds of propositions.
Yeah,
so we're not using words like existing if such things have expired.
So this is, you'll think about the general, the drafting of the provisions, when will that be to us, and you'll consider Section 32, you'll consider the merits-based arguments, which does dovetail into the legal argument. You'll consider affected neighbours' approval and its treatment, and schedule inside or outside to facilitate the processing of this thing, any enforcement repercussions.
Yes. That's the list.
That's the list.
Yes.
Yep. And come back to us in terms
of
realistically.
And I'll file a memorandum setting out the time frames by which each of those steps will be able to be achieved.
Yep, good. Now, less is more in saying that. There has to be something. So I read your attachment 10. I thought it was excellent. Attachment 10 to the JWS. I thought, can thoroughly understand all of that. So,
right.
But that's, clear drafting involving everybody that you need to involve over in the OIC.
Yes.
Mr. Walsh.
Yes, thank you, Ron.
Did you have questions? You didn't.
No, and TRUSPA hasn't had any involvement in the priorities,
yeah.
but Dr. Somerville's opinion does, well, a fundamental premise to how he reaches his conclusions around the priorities is his view on 124. And on that matter, Trustpower very much does have an interest.
That's fine.
And I'm just wanting to signal, Your Honour, that I'd like to be able to be in a position to file legal submissions on 124.
Oh, I think you should.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think you, but you should. Oh, okay, so I think you're saying you didn't have a particular interest in the priorities argument, but you'd like to respond on 124.
Yes, and it makes sense to be added to the list, ma'am, when other counsel are addressing you on priorities, because the issue will inevitably arise then.
Yep, so Mr. Cooper will do that. He'll note that you'll be making a submission on priorities, but bracketed to 124.
Correct. Thank you.
Okay, no, that's fine. Anything else? That's enough for today.
Yes, Your Honour.
Very good. So thank you very much. Huge effort. Huge effort. Very technical. And we are much assisted. Thank you very much. All rise.